A woman walked into the bar. A woman with a stained wrist to bicep cast walked into the bar. A woman walked into the Red Fox bar holding up a ragged forearm cast like one of Wonder Woman's indestructible bracelets, and with her good hand, she shredded a pink rose into Richie's half-full beer mug. She walked back to the door I'd propped open to air out the place, and all the regulars moved down a stool. She picked another rose from the bush that grew in that crack of dirt between the sidewalk and the bricks and stuck this one behind her ear, thorns and all. I thought that should hurt. She parked on an empty stool. "Gin and tonic," she said. Not many people ordered mixed drinks here. The Red Fox was a towny bar in a college town, and on a good night, I made maybe a couple of rum and cokes or a screwdriver. Mostly, it was cheap, pale beer on tap. That was a good thing, because anything more exotic than that would send me to the Mr. Boston Deluxe official bartender's guide I carried back and forth to work. The guide was a present from the mother of one of our friends after she spent the night in our apartment when her son was inducted into Phi Beta Kappa. He went out partying. We entertained his mother. Go figure. I made him a cake with runny icing. I have a photo of it somewhere. I have no photos of the Red Fox. I mixed up the gin and tonic and sat it on the black lacquer surface in front of her. We didn't use cocktail napkins. Cocktail napkins were a luxury Scotty the bar owner didn't spring for. I have no idea whether he made a profit or not. I wasn't even allowed to count the money at the end of the night. I had to put it in a paper bag and bury it under a clean trash bag in the waste can under the bar. He counted it in the mornings, and when I relieved him from my evening shift, he was meticulous about chastising me if the total on the cash register didn't match what was in the bag. It was a one-man bar, manned 5 out of 7 nights by a skinny college senior, moi, who drew 25-cent mugs of beer, washed glasses, tossed frozen breaded mushrooms into the deep fryer, sliced questionable lunch meat for sandwiches, waited tables, tended bar, and swept up at the end of the night. I couldn't even go to the bathroom without one of the regulars keeping an eye on things. When no one was there, I was tethered to that ancient expanse of oak and brass, the only thing of beauty in the place. Rose, that's what I named her in my head, sat there mumbling. She'd look up once in a while to stare at Richie fishing petals out of his mug with 2 fingers he waggled like tweezers. "That's $1," I told her. She glared at me. "The drink, it costs $1, I said. "My money's gone," she said. She thumped her cast on the bar. "Missing, thump. Stole, thump. I can't give you that for free," I said.
And there we have the conflict that sets up the rest of the story. How closely does this bar resemble a bar that you once frequented?
Well, actually, the very first part of this is absolutely true. I'm a college senior working in a bar in a college town. And a woman actually did pick a rose off of a bush and come in and crunkle it in some guy's half-filled beer mug. The rest of the story, most of it is not true, but that scene has stuck with me all these years, and this character just wouldn't go away.
You know, bars like this always have that one patron who is a troublemaker, kind of ruining the atmosphere for everyone else. Tell me more about the woman you met who resembled Rose, the woman with the petals.
She was scary. She did not pay for her drink and did leave and did not come back. But In the story, she comes back.
Well, there's another story that I really enjoyed reading in this book, Little Mister. It is about a guy who thinks he can get a stud fee for his wiener dog that his mom adopted. The dog has no papers showing a pedigree. But this story is about more than just the plot. Your protagonist is speaking in a courtroom with a judge, and he sounds like, a rural Southerner who makes up for an apparent lack of education with Southern charm. How did you come up with this voice?
He just started speaking. And I know that writers say that all the time, but that's really how it happens. I'm originally from Southern Indiana. I lived in Georgia and South Carolina. I do know that vernacular. But this guy just became more and more his own character as the story progressed for me as I was writing it.
I want to talk about short stories. On the one hand, they seem so convenient because they're short. So you could read one on the Metra, for example. But I've heard other short story writers talk about how difficult it is to get publishers to be interested in short stories. And I never quite understood that. I was wondering if you could shed some light on your experience as a writer of short stories in a marketplace.
I think that people tend to look at short stories as practice for the novelist. You know, you start out, everybody writes poems in elementary school and they all rhyme, and then everybody moves to short stories in high school or early college. But when you're a real writer, you write novels. And that is just so much bunk, but that's the way that it's kind of been, you know. And still I get people asking me, when are you going to write a novel? Well, I've written three novels and none of them are as good as my short stories. But in Ireland, for example, Irish people love short stories.
Yeah, you won the Fish Short Story Prize there a few years ago.
They didn't know me from Adam, and there were 5,000 entries in this contest, and I was the first place winner. The judge was David Mitchell, who wrote Cloud Atlas. And one of the fun parts about that was everyone was so excited about literature there. There was a poetry reading, and they had to get a bigger room because they had too many people coming to hear the poet. Imagine that happening.
I can hear poets in our audience gasping and saying, I'm moving to Ireland.
I'm moving to Ireland, and they probably should. And, you know, somebody stopped me on the street and said, okay, so which boy ended up with the girl in this story? And so, I bought the book, but tell me anyway. I haven't read it yet. Maybe it's because people grew up telling stories, so they like to listen to other people's stories. And here, I'm not sure why the novel takes such precedence.
Linda Hering is the author of the story collection A Woman Walked Into the Bar at WNIJ.org. You can see a video of her reading one of the stories we talked about, Little Mister. Linda, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.